This is an interview with Senators Carl W. Thompson and Clifford W. Krieger, conducted by Mark F. Smith for the State Historical Society of Wisconsin. The interview was held in Senator Krieger's office on December 9th, 1980.
This time, the machine is on.
You don't mean to start out again?
Yeah, if you want to start.
My family came from Germany. Various parts of my grandmother from my father's side came from Strasbourg in Germany. My grandfather more from the Prussian area of that time back in the 1880s approximately, and my mother's folks also were from Germany and came from the Hamburg area. So I came from, or my family came from various parts in Germany. My hometown is Merrill, Wisconsin. Although I was born in Madison, my father and mother were Merrill people. However, as a young man, about 1916, got his first job here in Dane County at out in the town of Burke as a cheesemaker for a town, for a cheese cooperative, of which Carl Thompson, another eminent progressive family in this community, who was the president of that co-op, and hired my father, and he was here for about 4 or 5 years. But while my folks were here, I was born here in the town of Burke in Dane County, and I might say I was also born in St. Joseph's Hospital here at Madison, which was quite unusual in those days for a mother to have her child in the hospital. Most of them were having him at home at that time. My religion is Lutheran. I was educated in the Merrill Public Schools, elementary and high school, graduated from high school in 1937, attended what we called at that time a commercial college in Merrill for 1 year. And then in the second year, I did attend one semester at a business school in Warsaw, but I did not complete that course there and never graduated from that school.
Okay, thank you. Senator Thompson, do you want to run through your background?
Yes, my grandparents were Norwegian immigrants. My grandfather on my mother's side was a Lutheran minister who was a minister in Stoughton for 30 years. My grandfather on my father's side took up a farm in western Minnesota in Evansville. And my father was a professor of agricultural economics at the University of Minnesota and University of South Dakota, later went to Washington with the Department of Agriculture, conducted the food survey at the time that Herbert Hoover made a survey of the food needs in Belgium right after the war. My father died a short time before my 6th birthday in Washington during the flu epidemic, and I came to Stoughton with my mother and my two sisters and lived with my grandfather, who was Reverend Hagee, a Lutheran minister in Stoughton. I attended and graduated from Stoughton High School in 1932, attended Luther College for 1 year, then attended the university and received a Hill degree in 36 and a law degree in 39. I suppose the greatest influence on me were some courses in high school and debating in high school. In addition to that, my father left a library in the general field of political science. The courses I took in high school got me to develop an interest in the political issues of the day, and I took a very early interest in government affairs. I remember staying up all night listening to the Democratic Convention of 1932 when Roosevelt was nominated.
Okay. Why not either one of you start with this? Senator Thompson, you said that your influences were the books and the general background. What influenced you to get into politics? And did you begin with the progressives, or did you begin?
Well, let me say that my background, my family were Republicans, but they apparently were of the moderate element of the party at that time, because when the La Follette movement started, they were backers and supporters of his, and so was my grandparent. But what influenced me mostly is I think that as a young man, of all the grandchildren, and there were seven of us, that my father's mother and from my father's side, his mother and father, there were seven. They had seven grandchildren, of which I was one. I think I was the only one that really was interested in my grandparents, where they came from in Germany, and what their conditions were there, and that they were of peasantry stock. And this had quite an influence on my life, to the extent that because a result of that, and spending much time with my grandparents, that I even learned to speak the German language as a result of that, because they could not speak very good English, and this was the custom to speak the native language, particularly on the farm, in which they were farmers. And I think my grandfather was probably one of the most influential, and he pointed out to me what their conditions were in that country. And he pointed out that he came to America for that reason, to better his life. And in fact, he also said he had a demand from my grandmother before he, when he asked her to marry her. He said that, I'll marry you if you promise to take me to America, because I refuse to raise our sons for the Kaiser. And of course, in those years, Europe was warring constantly, and that was one of the reasons that they came to this country. And I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to have all this information related to me, and that I was able to have that input from my grandfather. And to this day, I've been interested in politics, and to this day I still am. I am interested in people, and I am mighty proud of the heritage that I have, and that my grandparents were peasant stock from Europe. And that's why I'm interested in government today. And I believe that that has been one of the major influences of my becoming interested in government.
Okay, when was your first political involvement?
My first political involvement, let me say, I have to recollect this a little bit. 1940, I ran as a candidate for county treasurer up home on the progressive ticket, but I was unsuccessful. And then that following spring, I ran for alderman in the city of Merrill, and I was elected to that. And although I had been interested in politics and in government again, even during my high school career, I was always actively involved in the, particularly at presidential election times in the schools. And
what was your first political involvement? Senator Thompson.
I was at the University of Wisconsin beginning in the fall of 1933, at which time the first rumblings of the beginning of the Progressive Party took place. And there were a number of meetings that were held, including a meeting that was held in Madison, at which time I can recall all of the Madison progressives were present. I'm not sure whether LaFollitzer were there or not, but I know that Bill Evier was present at the meeting, and Glenn Roberts and some of the other early progressives. And at that meeting, the progressives of Dane County voted overwhelmingly in favor of starting a new third party. This was at a time that the progressives had been defeated in 1932 in the Republican primary by Walter Kohler, and then Al Schmiedemann went on to win the general election. So the situation was such that we were gearing up for the 1934 election, and we formed a young progressive club, or I was active in the young progressive club on the university campus. And during the campaign of 1934, or immediately before the campaign, I went out and circulated, I got 300 or 400 signatures, or I'm not sure whether I could legally get the signatures at my age at that time, but because it was 21 rather than 18, but at any rate, I worked with people and we got 300 or 400 signatures that we turned in. And then later on, I went out and got all of the various candidates for office on the progressive ticket to get together and buy an ad in this 4-page full newspaper size tabloid for, as I recall, either $10 or $15 a piece. And then we saw that was distributed to every family in Dane County. And I remember working with Charlie Holmberg, yeah, who was the assistant editor of the Capital Times, and he and I put that paper out. Then after the election, I talked to Phil LaFollette one day, and he wanted to know if I wanted the munificent job of sidewalk shoveler, lawn mower, night telephone answerer, and a room in the governor's garage on Gilman Street. And for the great sum of $15 a month, I performed those services. Later on, I became a clerk in the governor's office, at which time I discovered how easy it is to completely foul up a filing system and see how letters got lost. Then, as I said, I was active in the Progressive Club at the university. The Progressive Club was very active in statewide political campaigns, and it was also active in campaigns on the university campus. Up to that time, the Greeks controlled the campus politics, and we went in and took over the independent political organization and succeeded in electing a number of people to office in the class of 36, and in 1937, Jim Doyle, Judge Doyle in Madison, was elected as president of the class. We took over control of the Cardinal, which incidentally the following year was followed by a strike in which they fired the people who the old board put in. That was one of the interesting episodes of that period. And at that time, the big fight on the campus was who was going to control the progressive independent organization, the progressives or the communists. And we succeeded in keeping control of campus politics during the period of time that I was active on the campus. Then the first office I ran for was alderman in Madison from the first ward, which was a campus ward. The State Journal, unlike in this last campaign, for one of the first times in my career, they endorsed me. But at that time, they opposed me because they didn't want a carpetbagger from Stoughton being an alderman in Madison. Mostly, I think they were opposed to a student being an alderman in Madison. And in those days, a person, even though he was about to come out of law school, was still considered a young whippersnapper and shouldn't get active in politics, unlike today when young people are accepted and so forth. Then later on, I became alderman in Stoughton for several years. I became city attorney, and then I went away in the Army. Came back after the Army was active. Well, I was not as active as I should have been in young Bob La Follette's campaign for the United States Senate, because all my friends told me there's no problem at all. Bob's going to win. This guy McCarthy's nobody. And he suffered the same fate that Gaylord Nelson did, because he took the same attitude that he really didn't have any problem and that he was going to win. And so after the campaign of 1946, when Bob La Follette was defeated, the people came to me and wanted to know if I would be willing to be the campaign manager for Bill Rice, who was a professor of law at the university and running for Congress on the Democratic ticket. I did take on that assignment. Bob Henry defeated Bill Rice 2-1. After the election that same year, the congressman died, and they had a special election in the spring. I was prevailed on to run, and I ran against Glenn Davis. Glenn Davis was the Republican nominee. I was the Democratic nominee, and about 104,000 votes, as I recall, were cast, and I lost by 800 votes. Well, this was the first moral victory that the Democrats had, and so it resulted in my being prevailed upon to run as the Democratic nominee for governor in both 48 and in 50. And then in 52, I decided that I'd change places with Bill Proxmire, who was then the assemblyman from Eastern Dane County, and he became the candidate for governor, and I was elected to the assembly. I stayed there until Gaylord Nelson was elected governor, then ran in a special election again, I ran in a special election for his seat and became state senator, and have been a state senator ever since.
Okay. Were there specific individuals in the Progressive Party that led you to run on that ticket, or was it still the family heritage from being connected with the La Follette faction all along?
Well, I think the family heritage, and then I also think that certainly old Bob La Follette, Robert Marion La Follette the first, was a great inspiration on me. And I remember during high school even spending considerable time reading about him and making reports in certain classes on him. And I had certainly been impressed by him, and still think he was a great man. And it was through Senator Thompson's and my efforts that we finally got some type of a bust down here in the Capitol. I would like it to be, it certainly, he deserves a better memorial than what we have, but at least we have something, and we're grateful for that. And it was Robert La Follette Sr. I got to know Phil La Follette and Bob La Follette, and worked actively in their campaigns as a young man, and was quite involved with the Young Progressives in Wisconsin. In fact, I guess the only state convention we ever had outside of Madison and Milwaukee was up in my hometown of Merrill, and that must have been about 1940, wouldn't you say, Carl?
Yes.
And Bob La Follette was our keynote speaker there at that time. And there were those young progressive in those days were Senator Gaylord Nelson and Miles McMillan and Senator Thompson and myself and Thomas Fairchilds and Art Padgett and John Lawton, and there were others too that I just can't recall at the specific time. But
you were the chairman of that convention, or at least you presided at that convention.
Mm-hmm.
I remember giving a talk at that convention. I think that's the first time I met Tiny. He was the presiding officer of the convention, and I gave one of the talks at the convention.
Mm-hmm. I guess I was probably the only one that didn't have a formal education out of this whole group. The rest were either attending the university or had graduated from it. But I came down, and I think one of the greatest experiences that we had at one of those young progressive conventions when the socialists were active in Milwaukee. And I guess this happened in the senior party, the progressive party conventions from time. We used to have two delegations arrive from Milwaukee, and one was the socialist element and the other was the progressive element. And often we either one or the other had to be seated. And we had a lot of things that were interesting that happened. But I think that old Bob La Follette was a great inspiration to me.
Okay. Let me take a minute here and turn the tape over so we don't... Okay, the tape's back on now, and it is recorded. I'd like to go back to the conventions and the problems with socialist and progressive or rival delegations. And since both of you are involved with that kind of question, do you want to
make
some specific?
I guess that the reason that developed, the socialists that we had in Wisconsin were not the militant socialists that we have various groups and types of those organizations today that are active. But they stem primarily from the Milwaukee area, and I guess there was one or two socialists elected here in Dane County too, and there were some upstate in isolated spots. And of course, I think that you got to remember that because of the background of the German immigrants in Milwaukee, and of course there were quite a few of the intellects that came in 1848 during the German Revolution, and or the revolution in Germany, that were asked to leave the country. And many of those people, they were important people, settled in Milwaukee. The educated, those, and in all fields. Came to Milwaukee, and yet there was a strain of peasant stock that also outnumbered them. And I think that, I don't know about other nationalities, but socialism in this country was accepted by many Germans when they came to this country. And that's why and of course with Milwaukee being the socialist center, the progress, you got to remember that then at one point the progressives were really a coalition. Any political party has a coalition, philosophies and so on. And in the progressive movement was the moderate Republican, also some of the socialists became active in the progressive party, and and of course there were the coalition of farmers and the laboring people, and also university people, somewhat similar to the coalition that elected FDR. Don't you think so, Carl? I think there's a very close similarity there. And that's why we had, but at first, some socialists claimed that they represented the progressive element, and And then, of course, the progressives came, and that's why we had the difficulty in seating delegates at times from that area.
Well, I think there are a number of, just to elaborate a little bit on what Tony said, there are a number of strains running through this whole period of history. One of the factors was the influence, as Tiny pointed out, of old Bob La Follette, who, because of his personality, drew a lot of people into the progressive movement. Then, this was influenced by World War I. It was influenced by the victory in the teens, 1914, when McGovern was governor, and when they instituted all of these reforms in Wisconsin government. But Tiny and I came along at a later period when those things were gone by, long gone by, and we came in more or less in the early part, or during the Depression. The Depression had a tremendous influence on the development of the progressive movement, or on the people who came in the progressive movement, and particularly those who came in the Progressive Party. The people from the rural areas were influenced, as the progressive movement was influenced by the strains of populism that ran through rural Wisconsin. The milk strike that took place in 1932, or after 32, was a big reason why the farmers turned against Schmiedemann and turned to the Progressive Party in 1934. And coalitions of different types of people, either whether they had a background of socialism or a background with the La Follette progressive movement, or if they were farmers versus being labor people, had different outlooks and different backgrounds. And as Tiny mentioned, you have a coalition in all political parties of people with these different points of view. And we did have, influencing the Progressive Party, the Progressive Farmer Labor Federation, which was largely a federation of labor, former socialists, the urban wing in large part of the Progressive Party. And people sort of forget that old Bob La Follette did not have the support of the big cities that he had in the rural areas. And people generally say, well, progressives, that's urban because of the New Deal. Well, that was not necessary, that was not true in Wisconsin. It was largely a rural, but the urban people were coming in, and some of the people who were active were Andy Biemiller, for example, who was a former socialist who joined the Progressive Party, was a member of the legislature. The influence of the Depression is given by one incident. I can remember driving Phil La Follette someplace one evening, and I said, "Phil, what do you really think is the influence on gubernatorial elections now?" And again, the influence of the Depression, he reached in, he pulled his wallet out, and he said, "Carl, when that wallet is thick, then the ins stay in. When it's thin, then the ins go out." And I have, on a number of occasions, when I've been asked what I thought the biggest influence in the 1980 election was, I said, I think Phil La Follette gave the explanation way back in the early 1930s when he said that because people were not happy with the state of things economically, they voted the ins out. Well, this was Phil's theory as to the, well, he mentioned this as the factor that was most significant, and certainly was true that the progressive movement was based on the discontent of the people with their lot, just as the Tiny's grandfather came from Germany because he was discontented with his lot back in Germany, that he wanted to improve his condition. And I think that this was, as much as anything else, the progressive movement was based on trying to do something about the discontent that people had with conditions in the United States and in Wisconsin.
Okay. How active were the progressives up in at the time you entered as a candidate in 1940? That was the party was out of power by that time. Were there still active local people up in the Merrill area, or?
Yes. But through the 30s, which Carl referred to, the Depression years, 35, the county, for instance, on the county basis, there were a few county officials elected as a progressive, as progressive in 1937. My father was elected sheriff of Lincoln County and served 2 years, two terms, rather. Which was the limit at that time. It was a constitutional provision that he couldn't succeed himself more than once after election. And the whole courthouse was changed from Republican to progressive, with the exception of the county clerk, who was an amputee. And the same way with the register of deeds, they were the only two that were saved as Republicans. The rest of the courthouse, from the sheriff to the district attorney down to the surveyor, were elected as progressives. And they served until 1941. Then by that time, there were some Republicans that gained some of the county seats back, but we still had well over the majority of the county officials in our county were on a progressive ticket in 1946 when the party decided to dissolve and followed Bob La Follette Jr. To the Republican Party. But they were active up in the Merrill and the Wausau area and in that north central Wisconsin area. They were very active. And, you know, you got, unless you lived those times, the Progressive Party, and this was because of the hard times and people were looking for bettering themselves in an economic way, and this of course involved labor and the farmers and everyone, but really the progressive movement was something like the only comparison I can make to another organization that still exists today is the Farm Grange. There was a closeness and a knitting of people, it was almost fraternalistic without having the rituals of a regular lodge. But there was a sense of brotherhood. And it was very, very strong, and which you do not have today. Of course, all people had problems in those days, and that probably made a great difference. And the La Follettes came along, the younger La Follettes formed the party, and they were successful in their venture. And certainly, I am not ashamed of what the Progressive Party accomplished in this state when we were a progressive party. And certainly, I think the people were well represented. Of course, we had probably had public officials too that were embarrassing at times, just as we have in a political party today. I'm not saying that we were all saints, but there was something about it. There was a real close association, and I don't see that in political party today, unless I'm older, and probably when I was younger I had a different attitude towards that particular thing. But yes, the progressives were rather powerful from my area of the state. The progressives from my area of the state, though, chose basically to stay with the Republican Party, or go back to the Republican party when they dissolved in 1946, March 17th, at the Armory at Portage, Wisconsin.
Were you there?
Yes, I was there. I have a picture. I think it's here in the office somewhere, is where I was sitting under the Lincoln County Standard with, we were both young fellows, a fellow by the name of Walter Schwartz from Merrill, who is a farmer up there today. We were both the same age, but we were young progressives at that convention. Oh yes, Lincoln County had a good delegation there.
Did you have a vote at that convention? Or
yes.
Were you in favor of continuing
yes,
the party?
Yes, we voted with, when Bob La Follette asked us to go with the Republican Party, we supported that move.
You supported Bob La Follette?
Yes.
Okay. Were you at the Portage Convention?
No, I was still in the Army.
In the Army.
The Progressive Party was probably strongest in a few counties in the state rather than others.
Yeah.
And of course, Dane County experienced the same thing that Lincoln County did, and that is that we had either a sweep or almost a sweep in 1934 when we took over the courthouse here in Dane County. And that was, I think, one of the factors that did happen later on in 1946. When the party was disbanded, was that it was very difficult to marry the progressives with the stalwart Republicans. And Tiny had some experiences which he can tell you about.
Oh, yeah.
Just as we had problems in trying to form a Democratic Party in Wisconsin, in view of the fact that in 1938, the reason, or one of the big reasons, that Phil La Follette was defeated for re-election of governor was that the Republicans and the Democrats got together in a coalition, and each supported the other group of others' candidates in order to get the progressives out of power. And Phil La Follette and other progressives were defeated at that time. Well, this developed wounds which lasted for a long, long time. And I know that when I went out and organized for the Democratic Party later on, part of the job was to try to heal the wounds that the progressives thought that the old-time Democrats were a bunch of damn reactionaries, mm-hmm. and the old-time Democrats thought the progressives were a bunch of radical La Folletites. And it took a long time for that to be healed. Tiny can tell you about experience he had where they tried to keep him out of the, I guess did keep him out of the legislature because he was a progressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened. I ran in 1942 on the progressive ticket, and because it was my first venture in a district type of election, there were three fellows running on the Republican ticket and three in the progressive primary, and there was one Democrat. Well, there were seven candidates in the primary. Nine won the progressive nomination, and there was one Republican nominee, and of course, I lost that general election then. But my showing was so good that everybody encouraged me to go in. So in 1946, that was the year that the party dissolved. And in that spring, and of course I ran as a Republican, and I defeated the fellow that was elected 4 years ago in the primary.
You were on the same ticket as young Bob La Follette. I mean, in the same race.
Yes, yes. And local Republicans up in Merrill, my home community, and Marathon County, were vehemently opposed to me because I was of the progressive element, and because the progressives had left the Republican Party because the stalwarts were in control, and in the 30s, and now that we chose to come back, they slammed the door on us, and they didn't want us rerunning on a Republican ticket. But, so I had no Republican Party support. But I won that election. And I might say that in the primary, my opponent who I defeated, or the gentleman that was the senator, his people, the Republican, this will show you how strong anti-progressive the feeling was by the Republicans, ran him as an independent candidate against me in the primary with a sticker campaign. In those days, stickers were legal. They sent them to every family and every home in the district and told them how they could take that sticker, put it in the place for state senator, and mark that little square back and put the X there. Well, it ended that I got about 32,000 votes, but the sticker candidate got about 6,000 votes. 4 years later, in 1950, I was up for re-election. By that same time, things had toned down, but the Republican political leaders were still opposed, but they could gain no momentum, and I've been there ever since. And I might say that I am accepted in the Republican Party. I have my own ideas about the Republican Party, and in my area, I have no problem getting Republican support now. But it was a fight.
And initially, your support was the old progressive, people who had been progressives and continued to support you as a Republican, was that?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, the same thing happened to me in 1950 when I ran as a Democrat. Both in the congressional race against Glenn Davis and the gubernatorial race against Oscar Rennebaum and later Walter Kohler. I carried Dane County overwhelmingly, and I'm sure that the basic underlying reason was because I had been the chairman of the progressive organization in Dane County, and of course the Capital Times was very active politically in those days, and they constantly said that I was in the mold of the La Follette progressives, and that was the factor. So that I think in both of our cases, our early support was not from the old-time Republicans for Tiny, or not from the old-time Democrats for me, but from the former progressives who were still out there and still alive and kicking and interested in politics, who got interested in both of our campaigns.
You mentioned that it was the progressives seemed to be more than a party, even though they didn't have the ritual. Were you at all involved in Phil La Follette's national efforts?
No, I was not involved. But I'm glad that you brought that up. I think that that indicated it, and of course, I think the timing was wrong. Because I have pictures of that. My father went to that meeting, though. I think that was in a cattle barn at the Fond du Lac Fairgrounds.
It was in Madison at the, what is
the Stock Pavilion?
The Stock Pavilion. Yeah.
That's right.
It was a cattle barn.
And of course, he had red, white, and blue bunting. And the emblem of the Progressive Party was a circle, which you have on the top of the ballot with an X in the middle. Well, if you added a little hook on each end, well, you had the swastika. And of course, our conservative friends were very quick to point that out and make a big issue about it.
They said it was a circumcised swastika.
Circumcised swastika. But I think that was a little bit predominant at that time, but that was the only time that it ever came out in that effect. The feeling was just there. I'm talking more about the feeling of the people. The Progressive Party was more than a political party. It was an organization, and It was fraternalistic. It really was. Much more than what we have today in the apartments.
I think we might make some more comments about Phila Follett's effort to form the National Progressives, since you've asked the question. The oncoming war was not very popular in Wisconsin. And some people felt that Phila Follett was motivated, at least in part, in the formation of the National Progressives by an effort to separate himself from the foreign policy of Franklin Roosevelt. Phila Follett opposed the steps that Roosevelt had taken, Lend-Lease and other proposals, the speech that he gave, the quarantine speech and so forth. Mm-hmm. And some people felt that this was a reason for one of the reasons for forming the party. Well, the consequence of the formation of the party sort of was a double-edged sword, both of them coming back on him. The New Dealers didn't like him for forming the Progressive Party, and the people who were the most violent critics of Roosevelt didn't like him because he'd been associated with Roosevelt. So I'm afraid in the long run, he lost on both sides of the coin.
Yes, he did. I say the timing was wrong, Carl. Everything just seemed to... You know, you mentioned about Wisconsin, because of its background, was opposed to war. In fact, Wisconsin was overwhelmingly isolationist until December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese United States Navy at Pearl Harbor. And in 24 hours, everybody was ready to fight. We didn't want to be involved if we could possibly get away from it. But the minute that we were involved, Wisconsin residents were back of the war effort, and isolationism was in Wisconsin. It was one of its strongholds in the United States. And I think that is because by that time you had the second and third generations of these immigrants that came from the Scandinavian countries, that came from Germany, that came from Poland, and particularly the North European countries. And they were so fed up that they and heard this from their parents, the people, that they were just basically opposed to any conflict, especially in foreign affairs. And I always say that December 7th was the time that there was a complete change in the isolationist movement. What was that group? It was called America First, wasn't it, or something like that? And they... many of the people were involved. But that was one of the reasons why Bob La Follette, I think, was one of the reasons why he chose to go back to the Republican Party. Remember, all this while that we had a state and local progressive group, we had no national candidate. And every year the progressives would decide who to support. And I think they decided to support FDR all along. And then, of course, after the war, the progressives decided, well, maybe we better, I shouldn't say the progressives, but under the leadership of Bob La Follette Jr., asked that we return to the Republican Party, and that was one reason why.
Okay, I'm going to have to change the tape again here.
Before the convention at Portage, I know that young Bob La Follette struggled at great lengths to decide what he would recommend that the party do. And I stopped in Washington. I'm not sure when it was. It could have been in 1945, the summer I think in the summer of 1945. It probably was about then, and went in to see young Bob LaFalle. And Bob discussed then his alternatives. And he sort of indicated that he felt that the Democratic Party had not grown strong enough to be a significant factor in Wisconsin as yet in 1946. He felt that, especially in some areas of the state, the Progressive Party had almost died, and that running on the Progressive Party would be very difficult. And he recognized the difficulties of running as a Republican, but I have a feeling that he overestimated the possibility of his incumbency and his being a LaFollette. By incumbency, I mean his long tenure and his father's tenure in Wisconsin politics. And he did not realize that when he got into a political situation where despite the fact that people can cross over vote, that it was not a question of his being up against one person, but his being up against one person in that Republican primary. And I think that he did realize that it was a difficult situation, but he did not realize how difficult it really was. And then furthermore, he unfortunately was a better statesman than a politician.
Yes.
And he did not get back to Wisconsin as much as he should have. My own judgment is that if in the past 2 years Gaylord Nelson had arranged a major speech in every large population center in Wisconsin, he would have won re-election. The same thing was true of Bob LaFollette. He hardly knew the labor people in Wisconsin, according to some people I talked to. He'd completely lost touch with the labor people, and they were the new members of this coalition. They weren't the old progressive people, and he just lost by, what was the vote?
40,000.
It was a very close vote.
It was a very close vote in that primary, and again, it was overconfidence, but failure to get back, obsession with things he felt were very, very important in Washington, but better to be a live politician than a dead statesman.
Okay, maybe just to wrap up here, if you could give your character, you both knew Bob and Bob Jr. and Phil, at least to some extent, if you could characterize them as both as politicians and as statesmen, much in the way you just characterized Bob Jr.
Well, Phil LaFollette was an extraordinarily good speaker. He was very much like his father. Phil LaFollette liked to campaign. Phil LaFollette liked to govern. He was extremely interested in political issues. He loved the challenge of combat and in the period in the 30s when he made all these proposals, and when the legislature was within one vote and he had to try to pick up a couple of votes, picked up Nelson out of Superior and Zimney out of Milwaukee to get a majority in the state Senate. Nelson had been a Republican and Zimney had been a Democrat, and they came over and voted with him, but he sort of had the same, he wanted to do what Roosevelt did, to put through programs that were meaningful programs. But at the same time, I think he thoroughly enjoyed going out and campaigning. He thoroughly enjoyed giving political speeches. I can remember the line that he'd have on all these political speeches. He'd say, "The great trouble in America today is the terrible concentration of wealth in the hands of a few. And what's been happening is It's been like a milking machine on the body politic. This milking machine would go working and would take the money away from the many and give it to the few. What we have got to do is to take that milking machine and turn it around and take the money away from the wealthy and give it to the others and have that milking machine go zip, 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 and the crowd would just howl when he would do that. Not just that incident, but the many types of very dramatic ways in which Philip Follett expressed himself. Now, Bob La Follette was not that way at all. He talked much more like a lecturer would talk. And Bob La Follette Jr. did not like politics. He did not like the idea of going around and campaigning with people. I think it was Glenn Roberts who told me that there was one period for 9 months he never came back to Wisconsin. He just did not like to go and do what Lyndon Johnson said, press the flesh. Yeah. He did not like to go out and shake hands with people. But he loved Washington. He wanted to reorganize the federal government, and he just worked, and that was his great project. But when he finished that project, he still didn't come home. He found another rationality for not coming back, and I think that the underlying problem was that he did not like to do what Phil did. If there ever was a contract between two individuals, it was young Bob and Phil, and of course this comes up in all of the biographies. Young Bob's biography and Phil's biography, I guess that was an autobiography and so forth. You can just sort of read that in all the biographies. But that certainly was true then.
I think Carl has really gave you a good description of the two younger La Folletts. And I certainly have to concur in that. I think that Bob Jr. was more sedate. And of course he was an intelligent individual. He was probably the intellect of course, Phil was very intelligent and very well learned, no doubt about it. But he did make a different impression in the crowd. When both of them were together, they certainly both appealed to various types of people. I saw them both on the same platform, and I think that Carl has covered that particular picture very well. I think while we have the opportunity, we ought to talk about some of the other candidates in the Progressive Party. Ted Damon, who was the Secretary of State from Milwaukee, who was a progressive. Sol Levitin, the most colorful person in my era of Wisconsin politics.
State Treasurer.
Yes, he was the State Treasurer. President John Reynolds' father was the Attorney General, Progressive Attorney General from Green Bay. It was, and I guess it typifies the type of people that were involved in that Progressive Party. We're getting back again to what we talked about originally before. And it was a pretty close-knit organization. I think one of the things that also contributed to the downfall of the Progressive Party to make it a more broader party. In fact, in those days it was often referred to as the La Follette Party because of the La Follette family that were involved. But Spike Loomis, the attorney from Mauston, who ran for governor and was elected. And that's how Goodland became governor, because Spike Loomis died right after the election before he took office. Now, Spike Loomis was a man that would have brought, I think, another area of people into the fold of the party. He was not probably as outspoken as Phil La Follette, as Gusto, but he was also a man of Well, he was another sedate person. These people were intelligent people. And I think that had we been able to have Spike Loomis serve as our governor, I think we would have built the Progressive Party further. And it would have become more of a adult party instead of, you know, it never really had that much time. What was it, 10-year period? That's about what it was.
12 years.
Yeah, 12 years. And Spike Loomis would have added that aspect to it. And those people who didn't particularly like the La Follettes, I think we would have picked up another element of the people in the state of Wisconsin. And who knows? We may have been in existence today. You know, the Farm Labor Party in Minnesota lasted for quite a few years. And so we had some very, very interesting people. I can still see Saul Levitin coming up to those farmers in my area and speaking in those town halls. And of course, if it was a bigger rally in the Armory in Merrill, I'd have this black coat on, black hat. He was Jewish, beard, goatee more type of and white, silvery hair, and tell of his experiences, how he came to this country, and how he was a peddler with a wagon and a horse. He was an actual peddler is what he was, not at that time. He was in the banking interest at that time. He was a self-made man. But he could communicate with a rank and guy, a file guy, whether he was out on the field in the farm, or whether he was on the street or in a shop where labor was involved. I had great respect for all these progressive leaders in Wisconsin, and I think we should also mention Morris Rubin, who was. Who just passed away recently, who was active and editor of the Progressive magazine for many years. I remember Morris Rubin. I think he was on Bob La Follette's staff at the time that I really got acquainted with him, when young Bob La Follette was senator. But he put on many miles going through the state working for this movement. We probably have forgot to mention some of them, Carl, because there were many great people. And even the local leadership, like you remember Walter Gronke.
Wausau,
an attorney, represented, was a labor lawyer, really. He was a speaker of gusto, and he was a fighter. He was a fighter, and old John Chevy, a farmer in the town of Schley in Lincoln County, and you'd think that he was a university graduate, but just self-educated by reading. And he would get up and conduct the finest meetings in the most polite manner. And they weren't religious, but there was something serious about many of those people. Many of those people. From the top on down.
Be interesting to take a blue book for 1934, 36, 38, 40, and just look at the people in there and make some comments about those people. I don't remember who they all are now, but there were a number of them who were really... Well, Andy B. Miller was from the Progressive Farmer Labor Federation and been a socialist, and he went on to become the head of the labor political group in this whole country.
Mm-hmm.
Or Paul Alfonsi was a leader in the Progressive Party at that time, and later went on to become a Republican speaker in the legislature. And see, who were the others in that? Well, Vernon Thompson was the leader of the stalwart Republicans at that time, went on to become Attorney General, almost governor.
Vernon Thompson was governor.
Oh, yeah, sure, he was governor, yeah.
After he was attorney general.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was governor, and then Geller defeated him.
Yeah. Yeah.
58.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was elected for the Senate. Who else in the legislature? There were others who were very picturesque people who had a following, and Merlin Hull.
And Merlin Hull, yeah. And
congressman from up in the Eau Claire area. Mm-hmm.
Barney Garmon,
yes.
And his son later came as an assemblyman here. Well, Barney, after he was defeated by Alvin Okonski, served in the, came back to the assembly and served as a Republican. And then, of course, Barney's son succeeded him. And, these were just, they were ordinary people, but they were tops.
Okay. Well, actually, I wanted to hear more about those people rather than Bob and Phil, but I don't know all the names at this point.
Yeah. Well, that's why we wanted to, I thought we should bring some of those in. You know.
Okay. I think that's about all that we need for today.
Got all the questions answered.
I think we got everything.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, that's all right.